Radio.com Sports presents Bet Sweats with Joe Ostrowski, breaking down the latest in sports betting.
Joe Ostrowski, Sarah Perlman with you on Bet Sweats on this Tuesday. And due to popular demand, I figure let's just start this right away. We don't need to wait until the end of the college football season. Let's start doing more college basketball on the show. And we've got Eli Herskovich. I told him we don't need to go out and get some of these national guests. We've got you right here. The Bet Sweats listeners want to hear Eli. Maybe we'll call this Hersh on Hoops. That was the name of his old podcast before he stopped doing that one, Sarah. He quit that one, and then he started doing one for Radio.com. He said he's going to do like one every 2 months. So I'm like, okay, let's just do a weekly segment on the show. That's what the people want to hear. And we've got some big games coming up here, Eli, over the next couple of days. But first, let's talk process, because that's more important than anything when it comes to betting. We can give out picks, and you're going to give out some picks, but process is much more important, especially with everything that we're dealing with, the challenges in 2020. So if you're into analytics, like the secret on KenPom has been out for years and years. If you look at the KenPom ratings and how he previews the games, it mirrors identically what the point spread is every single day, just about every single game. So there's no more edge there anymore. But just tell us about your process. What are you looking at when you're handicapping a game? And has it changed this year with so many things up in the air before games?
Yeah, my strategy hasn't changed a whole lot. And it goes back to last year. I guess I changed it up more so last year than in years past. I am betting much less, not only maybe a little bit less in units in terms of live plays, but on top of that, much less in terms of net amount of games per day at the beginning of the season because of all the uncertainty. And now we have so much more of that with COVID going on. And I'll obviously be on top of injuries, like you mentioned, Joe, all that stuff because of COVID and players being out, teams, games being taken off the board. We saw that last night with UCL and Long Beach State. But I've taken totals out of my betting for college basketball pretty much completely, unless there's a total that I'm really intrigued by. And then I'm betting, again, way less in terms of the beginning of the season because all of the variables that go into a given game and a given matchup that I might not know a team as well as I think. And that's important because when it comes to conference play, that's when I really load up on games, especially on Saturdays. Then I'm usually betting 10 or 12 games because I have a good gauge on those teams.
Well, Eli, I jokingly said to you last night, like, I'm done with you after the Bama game, but it is so early on. So, no, I'm not done with you. I know a lot of people want to tail you. But to your point, it's the beginning of the season, right? Like, you don't know what the heck to expect. Teams are trying to figure it out. So either there's a clear edge in your book or you're just trying to kind of look at these teams and gauge from there. At about what point? Is it a week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it 3 weeks? Is it until, you know, really in conference play that you feel kind of confident and are in the swing of things?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we'll hit on this. There's a future that I'm really intrigued by in a little bit, but I think it depends on the matchup. Like if there's a line that a team is a bigger dog, and like just to kind of bleed this into the futures conversation, it may take until conference play, and especially when it comes to like the second round of a matchup. And if you look at some of these mid-major conferences, like Boise State, a future I have at 300-1. Their conference, the Mountain West, is playing back-to-back games for each opponent. And they were supposed to play New Mexico in a back-to-back, I think, on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. Mm-hmm. But New Mexico wanted more time, and the NCAA granted that. And now Boise State has to have another non-conference game against somebody else that they have to pick up this week, like Villanova did over this past weekend with VaTech. That game was scheduled on Friday. VaTech is an 8.5-point dog on Saturday. So kind of on that note, I think it's really interesting to watch the way the market opens these games up, because the market's thinking, okay, on a neutral floor, just going back to that game with Villanova, VaTech for a second, I think you open up an interesting door there, Sarah. Like that's a neutral floor line. That is a line where the books, the market, the odds makers aren't considering that Villanova just played back-to-back, just won their respective tournament at the Mohegan Sun against Arizona State, a pretty good team in their own right this season. They weren't supposed to play on Saturday. Jay Wright schedules the game, like, I think at midnight on Friday, something like that, or the Villanova Athletic Department did. And then VaTech's an 8.5-point dog, so that makes the line about, let's say, 11.5 if Villanova's playing at home with a full house, which I think is a fair line, an 8.5 on a neutral against an underrated VaTech team. That stood out to me. So I think it's this year more now than ever, like on top of just COVID news and guys being out, like we saw that with Gonzaga this past week against Auburn. They had a couple guys that tested positive. They still played the game, even though they were like non-major contributors, and the NCAA still allowed that game. So just watch for these non-conference games that aren't expected to be played and are just added to the roster because of a situation like Boise State and New Mexico this weekend, where you might get some value because of an unexpected matchup and a team like Villanova that didn't have a lot of time to prep for an underrated Votech team.
Let's hit on some other futures before we get to these games. You mentioned Boise. You're on Boise, and we mentioned on this show a week or two ago to look at Boise with a monster number. It was around 3. I found one at 500-1 at PointsBet at the time. And we've also talked about Alabama, a loser last night, but you still like them. You can get them at juicy odds at 80-1. And I know you're dialing it back a little bit, and you're going to add throughout the season. We're going to get a March Madness. Like, that's going to happen. Will we get an entire regular season? I don't know, but we're going to get a March Madness. Are there any teams that you're keeping a close eye on that you've got written down? Maybe you're looking for a specific number right now, or you're going to let maybe a month or so play out?
Yeah, the team that I'm looking at, and it's not the juiciest number right now, but I mentioned this on your show on the Score Early Odds, Joe, which airs on Saturday mornings, and I mentioned this in my radio.com article too. I really like West Virginia. And going back to, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when I was evaluating some of these lower tier odds, West Virginia popped out to me at 20-1. They're 20-1 on PointsBet, same odds as Wisconsin. Now, they're 20-1 before tomorrow night's game against Gonzaga. I know we're jumping ahead to tomorrow, and we'll get back to today's games, the Champions Classic with Kansas and Kentucky and Michigan State and Duke. But this is one of the best defensive teams in college basketball. 7th in KenPom's adjusted defensive efficiency rating, which is a defensive efficiency on a KenPom scale. So depending on the matchups. So West Virginia, again, top 10. They would be top 10 regardless in defensive efficiency if you throw out the adjusted term. But this is a team that, to me, going into the season, the biggest question mark was ball handling and backcourt. And Miles McBride has looked fantastic in West Virginia's 3 games so far. And why that stands out to me is they played a great ball pressure team in VCU. Yes, it's not Shaka Smart's VCU team that made it to the Final Four back in 2011, but they pressure you up and down the floor even without Shaka there. And McBride and the rest of this backcourt, Sherman, Tash Sherman, a JUCO transfer from a couple of years back for the Mountaineers. He brings a lot of floor spacing, but he can also handle the ball. So I like West Virginia's ball handling situation, and that matters a lot in March, especially if you face a pressure defense like a VCU. Maybe they sneak in as a 12 or a 13 seed or get in via the play-in game, whatever it may be, in the games before the round of 68 start. So West Virginia's backcourt is really interesting to me, and I'm intrigued by that. Pulver is one of the best, one of the most underrated bigs in college basketball. And I think he's kind of underrated in the Naismith conversation too. Just looking at West Virginia's front court, they have Sheboy, I get it, but Culver can really score up front, and he's developed a little bit of a mid-range game, obviously an elite offensive rebounder and defensive rebounder. I think he's in the race for that, maybe a little far back, but tomorrow's matchup is big with Gonzaga against Timmy, who's in the race in that conversation too, along with Jalen Suggs, freshman point guard, who not only might win freshman of the year, but on top of that could win the Naismith even just as a freshman. They have Osaboye, who's a really good wing and can defend and create turnovers. So this isn't your typical Bob Huggins full court press, but they still press like 3/4 of the court up. So they're an elite defensive team, like I mentioned, and they could score the ball. They could shoot the ball with Sean McNeil. I mentioned Taz Sherman. Again, a really good backcourt with McBride. So I think going into this game with Gonzaga, and maybe we'll preview the game after the games tonight with Kansas, Kentucky, and Michigan State, Duke. But that 20-1 number would drop if West Virginia were to lose or were to beat Gonzaga tomorrow night, which is why I think it's a really intriguing number, even though it's low already.
Well, Eli, for all the people that you probably blocked on Twitter and seriously, all the one that everyone that loves to tail you, there are a lot of good games tonight. You talked about Kansas, Kentucky. I think Kansas laying 4.5 right now. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I think this line is inflated a little bit. Like, starting with that game, it's the 2nd of the Champions Classic. Mm-hmm. Kentucky got smacked by Richmond on Sunday, and Richmond has some really good guards with Grant Gilliard, who's one of the better defensive point guards in college basketball. He made a sick assist when he was running out on the sideline, and he flipped it over his head to a Richmond player, and they scored on that. One of the, probably the best pass you'll see all season. So I think the market is overreacted. This line opened at a pick, so immediately the market moved this thing. It's all the way up to five, by the way. I know PointsBet has a 4.5, but yeah, you can get a 5 right now on Kentucky if you shop around. And I think that's a very valuable number. Yeah, man, this is a complete market overreaction to me. Yes, Kentucky still has a ways to go offensively, but really good guard and probably a wing in Brandon Boston, who was electric in the second half. Still a very good defensive team. And remember, this is a Kansas team that, yes, they smacked St. Joe's after losing to Gonzaga pretty handily on Thanksgiving, but still a Kansas team that's adjusting a little bit without Devon Dotson, without Udoka Azubuike in the front court. So based off line inflation, I think you're getting good value with Kentucky to keep this thing around two possessions at plus five.
Okay, so we usually do lightning bets on the show about around this time, and there's no NFL. There was supposed to be, but there isn't. There's no Maction anymore. So kind of treating this as lightning bets too. You would bet on Kentucky plus 4.5 too? Would you go 4.5? Obviously look for the 5.
Right, look for the 5, okay. But obviously if you're betting the 5, yes, you can get the push with the 5 if it ends on 5, if it lands on 5, but I'm also looking for a 4, obviously, looking for the game to Kentucky to lose by 4 or less or win the game. So, yeah, I think 4.5 is still valuable with the Wildcats.
Okay, what about Duke Michigan State at Cameron, but you don't have the crazies there. Duke favored by 3.5, a total of 151.
That's exactly the first point I want to bring up, Joe, is I think Duke is getting a little bit too much home court credit right now. And what? If you look at the Illinois-Duke line going up in, I think it's 2 weeks or so from now, maybe a week and a half. Illinois, one of the best teams in college basketball. I'm not saying Michigan State is better than Illinois, so you would have to think that Duke is going to be a little bit bigger of a favorite against Michigan State at home. But Duke is, I think it's like Illinois plus 1, maybe around 0.5 point, so about a pick between Duke and Illinois in a couple weeks. I'm surprised this thing opened at 4.5. I grabbed Michigan State plus 4.5 last night. I was talking with Ken Barkley, co-host of You Better You Bet. I think he has this line around Duke minus 5.2. So he favors Duke a little bit. But if you look at Duke over the last decade or so under Coach K, they give up a ton of points inside the paint and around and inside the arc too. So this is a team, when you look at opponent scoring rate, that is a stat that I look at a ton, maybe more midway through the season in terms of looking for a bigger sample size. But for a Duke team that, again, hasn't brought a lot back, I'm not saying that Duke and Coach K is going to shift to his zone like they did when they had Bagley and Carter in the front court, because that team could not defend at all, and Coach K was trying to hide some defensive issues. But Michigan State has some size up front, including the Marquette transfer from a couple of years back, Joey Hauser. Josh Langford can really attack the basket. You know, looking at this Michigan State team right now, the most underrated piece, not even Joey Hauser, the transfer, but Josh Langford, he's been hurt the last 2 years. That MSU team that lost to Texas Tech in the Final Four when Virginia beat Tech in the championship game, don't even want to talk about that. I know Joe was on the air for that one when it was happening. Fucking just infuriating when Tech lost that game in overtime. But Langford wasn't healthy for the second half of that season, wasn't healthy all of last season, and he's a really good ball handler and a secondary ball handler. So, yes, MSU doesn't have a true point guard. Foster Lawyer, small white dude, hate the guy. He can just shoot, really. Can't really handle the ball. Somehow he's developed some sort of scoring prowess this year. We'll see if it translates into this game. But I think Langford is a key to this game, and also Rocket Watts, a much bigger variable, but could stretch the floor. So I think MSU is going to be able to play inside out. Yes, they don't have Cassius Winston, for people that watched MSU last season, or Xavier Tillman, but Joey Hauser inside and Langford's ability to penetrate against a young Duke team, I think, is the key here that doesn't have Jones from last year, one of the better defenders in college basketball. I think MSU, even at plus 4, I got him at plus 4.5 yesterday, is a valuable number.
Eli, I'm so happy because before we came on today, I'm like, please tell me you like Michigan State, because this is actually my first college basketball bet of the season. I saw it last night when I was looking and did very little research compared to yours, but I liked Michigan State too. That was actually my kind of lightning bet for tonight. Grab the 4.5. I think it'll be a close game on top of everything you said, which was obviously, like I said, far more in depth, but just looking at the wins they have, at least Michigan State kind of has one more notable win. Duke just played Coppin State, so maybe coming out a little flat. So I, too, like Michigan State plus 4.5.
Yeah, and like just to bounce off that point, Duke was up by 27 in the second half against Notre Dame. Notre Dame ends the game, Trey Mancini's team, the Irish end the game on a 7-0 run, and it closes at the it ends the final score was on the closing number of 10. So Michigan State pushed. If MSU wins that game by 20, listen, I get it's Notre Dame. They have a lot of new pieces this season too, but the line's probably around maybe it opens at around 3.5, 3. So in terms of the 4, 4.5, I think you're getting some value with the Spartans.
Eli, we've got some big games tomorrow too, but if you want to save like Illinois Baylor for Wednesday, that's fine too. Anything else that you want to mention? Not just the big games. I'll cash any kind of ticket. I don't care what you're telling me to bet on as long as it wins.
Yeah, I want to get to West Virginia Gonzaga just because I mentioned it with the future, but let's quickly, like, I'll 30 seconds here. I know I usually go long at about 30 seconds, but I'll keep it quick. Some notable games today. Texas, Indiana. Texas got a little unlucky yesterday against Davidson. This line opened at a pick. It's all the way up to Indiana, -3 at some books. I'm staying away. I know Indiana looked really good against Providence yesterday. A Providence team that I laid a little bit on in terms of a live play, like +7.5, +17. I thought they would at least cover the +17. Couldn't do that. Indiana went on a bit of a run in the final 2 minutes. So I think Indiana's a little bit vulnerable here, just going back to yesterday's game state and Texas again. Not getting a ton of calls in the Davidson game, but not playing that game. North Carolina Stanford is a stay away from me. I know people like Stanford catching the 4 after what they saw with Bama yesterday. Maybe the Cardinal is a little bit undervalued in the market, but not enough for me with UNC's physical and size edge with Garrison Brooks and Armando Bacot in the front court. Western Kentucky and Louisville at Louisville at the Yum Center is really intriguing because Samuel Williamson, Louisville's big. I was actually tweeting about this yesterday, and one of the Louisville reporters tweeted at me back, a guy that covers Louisville, saying Williamson's probably out with the dislocated big toe. So that's big for Louisville, for the Cardinals in this one. But Tavion Hollingsworth is questionable, one of Western Kentucky's lead ball handlers. So I would, even at +4.5, I would stay away from Western Kentucky until you get the news about Hollingsworth. And even then, I'm a little dicey about it. So that's a game that's intriguing to me. And then looking at tomorrow's game, again, a reason why I'm considering it, and you can follow me on Twitter at Eli Herskovich to see if I end up playing West Virginia to win
unless
the title at 20-1. What's up, Joe?
Unless he blocked you, yes.
Unless I, yes.
Go
then
ahead.
Then people can hear on the podcast, that's all.
Then you have to listen,
yeah.
So.
Right, exactly, then you have to listen. So going into this game tomorrow, Gonzaga's beaten Kansas, and they smashed Auburn pretty handily over the last weekend or so, going back to Thanksgiving. But those two teams want to push the tempo. And like I mentioned with Kansas, they're playing without Dotson. They're playing without Udoka Azubuike. So they were adjusting without their two best players from last year, one of the best bigs in college basketball. West Virginia wants to play at a completely different pace. This is a team under Huggins that wants to slow the tempo down, even with McBride. And even when they turn you over, they want to push the floor, of course. But they're gonna slow the pace down. This is one of the best offensive rebounding teams in college basketball, which is why I like them from a future standpoint, too. It's a great second-chance opportunity to slow down the pace, whereas a lot of teams that they would face in the tournament want to speed you up. And with a young guard like Suggs, I'm not saying he's going to get rattled, but if West Virginia can create their fair share of second chance opportunities in this one, and they have a size advantage in terms of physicality in the front court, even though they're about even in height, if you look on KenPom with Timmy going up against Culver and Shibway, I think West Virginia is probably going to get around a 5 or a 6 in this game on a neutral in Indy tomorrow night. And I would expect West Virginia to at least cover that number, if not win this game, because tempo is a huge thing to look for when you're betting on college basketball. Joe mentioned some things that I look for in college. That's one of them. A key number to watch, just try to grab it when it opens up to get West Virginia at the best possible number, even though the public is all over Gonzaga. Maybe it pushes it up a half a point, but I like West Virginia to have a shot to win this game, which is why I think the 20-1 futures ticket is valuable.
Yeah, so you're gonna place that wager. You're looking for something better than 20, but it doesn't seems like the market agrees. Like they're just set at 20. I don't think that you're gonna be able to get that. So you're gonna be mad if West Virginia loses, and then the number goes up a little bit, but it probably won't.
Well, the one right, it's not yet. Even if they got blown out by Gonzaga, it's not. Like if you go back really quick, I know Sarah's like, I want to get the fuck out of here. Don't want to hear any.
Yeah,
more
we're
bubbles.
Like overtime.
No, I'm really trying to take it all in because I haven't placed futures bet. So this is helpful because I've been so in the NFL. I just started getting into college basketball again.
All right, fair enough. So again, just looking at from the perspective of the futures market, Texas Tech, a team I brought up that lost in the title game to Virginia a couple of years back. They played Duke. Right. I think it was at MSG in a non-conference game. They were tied at the half. They were controlling the pace in the second half. Another team that wants to slow you down with Chris Beard play elite, no middle defense. And they lost that game by 11. And listen, it doesn't mean that if West Virginia loses to Gonzaga by double digits, they're automatically played in the title game. But it's a future I like. I don't expect this number to go down a lot. Even after a loss, even after, let's say, a couple losses in non-conference play. I think 20-1 is pretty valuable when you have one of the more underrated bigs and underrated players in college basketball, among all the other things I mentioned in Culver. So I like the number, and I like West Virginia tomorrow night against Gonzaga.
All right, very good. Eli, that was awesome. Thank you so much. We're going to try and do that at least once, maybe two times a week, depending on what's going on with college hoops. So great stuff from Eli Herskovich. Thank you to Charles Davis for dropping by the show, Dylan Burns, Jake Galley, also working. And Sarah, thank you for dealing with us and Eli's hit rate. Had fun.
You had to throw that in there. All yes, things considered, great, thrown out the window. Thanks for having me, guys. That was fun. And let's go Michigan State, Eli.
All right, well, Sarah will be back on the show on Friday, I think, unless she cancels. Ross Tucker will be back over the next couple of days. 10 a.m. Eastern, BetSweats, Monday through Friday on the Radio.com app.